It is Monday, March 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Russian President Vladimir Putin easily wins re-election after facing token opposition.
This is an election shorn of any suspense.
Security officials from the United States, South Korea, and Japan meet in San Francisco to prepare for a summit between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, and Snapchat makes a blunder involving singer Rihanna and a former boyfriend. It's all ahead. Russian President Vladimir Putin won a resounding victory in the presidential election, soundly defeating seven other candidates. Opposition leader Alexei Navalny was disqualified from running in the election when he was convicted for embezzlement in December. Given a five-year suspended sentence, Navalny said the conviction was politically motivated to keep him out of the race. Putin has been in power as either president or prime minister since 1999. Reporter Jamie Detmer is in Moscow. He tells me the result was hardly unexpected.
Big surprise, yes. This was an election shorn of any suspense. Russia Today, as they opened their election show last night, one of the presenters was talking about an air of anticipation. Well, no one really had any sense of anticipation about this election. It was pretty clear right from the beginning that he was going to win. The big question was by how much and what the turnout would be. What we heard was that the Kremlin had been told by Putin he wanted at least a 70% turnout, and he wanted at least 70% share of the vote. And there have been, as you've probably seen, reports of allegations of vote rigging, ballot box stuffing, and voter coercion, whereby the bosses of factories were pressuring workers to go and vote and take a photograph of their ballot paper to prove that they had indeed voted. Saying all of that, even with all those voter irregularities, it was pretty clear to me, certainly in Moscow and on the outskirts, that Putin was the most popular candidate. I only found two polling stations, two people admitting to having voted not for Mr. Putin.
And the primary opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, was not even allowed to participate.
No, he was barred. He was barred because of a fraud conviction that he says is a sham and that was designed to keep him, exclude him from electoral politics. Look, I mean, even though we call him a primary opposition leader, I think one must emphasize that the opposition, if one by that means the liberal opposition, was incredibly disorganized this election cycle and in disarray. Whether we like it or not, Putin is popular amongst a large section of the Russian population. And I think part of that is that he certainly, in the early part of this century, up until 2012, had overseen a remarkable improvement in the economy. If you look at the stats, the statistics, more people own cars, more people have microwaves, etc. That was partly nothing to do with what he actually did. It was because of an oil price jump. And oil is a very important part of the Russian GDP. It's fallen, by the way, a little bit since 2012 because of the price drop in oil and because of Ukraine-related sanctions. But certainly there's more order and stability in Russia now than there was, let's say, in the wild days of the 1990s, and I think a lot of people reward him for that. As well as that, you've got a younger generation, Generation P as we call them, 18-year-olds who've never known anyone but Putin in power. And I think a lot of them felt that there wasn't an alternative candidate that they could vote for.
And what about the response by international election observers who are in Russia for this?
Well, I actually bumped into a European parliamentary election monitor this morning, who shall remain nameless because he asked me not to name him. And I said, what do you think about the election? What's your assessment? And he said very dryly to me, he said, well, the government got what they wanted to get out of it.
Jamie Detmer reporting from Moscow. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, first, I just have to say, sort of hard to have serious opposition when one of the leaders is put in jail and removed from the ballot. Navalny, and the other one, Boris Nemtsov, is killed on the streets of Moscow, just about two blocks from the Kremlin. So I just had to get that out.
I should say, though, Navalny is actually not currently in jail. Has been in jail.
Yes. But he was removed from the ballot.
He's absolutely barred, yeah.
So turning to social media and things that have people talking, it's a story that is not getting a lot of, it doesn't seem to be kind of getting the traction that I thought it might. In the city of Austin, which is in Texas, it's the state capital, very popular university town, very popular town in general. There have now been four bombings that apparently are targeting, as they are saying, people of color. In other words, minorities, African Americans, it seems, perhaps Latinos. The information isn't quite there. One of the people getting information out, here's a name you'll recognize, Steve Herman, has been tweeting about this. Good for him, our own White House correspondent. He's saying that according to Chief Manley, who's the acting chief of police there in Austin, similarities among all four explosive devices based on preliminary investigation. He also noted that this fourth bombing, just a little bit earlier, was set off by a tripwire, which police are saying indicates a level of sophistication for the bomber or bombers. We don't know who's doing this yet. But a lot of people are upset about this, and a lot of people are upset by what they're perceiving is a lack of coverage and why that may be. I have to lean into the screen. Pardon me, my contacts aren't quite working today. Angela Kay writes, you can try to take guns off the streets, but nut jobs will turn to the internet and learn how to make explosives. You can't regulate evil. Anna Hines, this gets to a comment you're hearing in many different forms. What's the point of having 24-hour cable news channels when there is actual breaking news happening and not one channel is covering it? And some people are actually putting the blame, laying the blame not just on news channels, but to other media outlets, and saying, well, look, it seems to be people of color who are being targeted in these explosions. People, you see this comment a lot. I bet you bottom dollar, if they were white or Christian, that people would be doing a lot more coverage of this. But they'd be calling this a terror attack. So far, we're not calling it a terror attack. The police are not. I don't know. I think it's arguable whether the coverage would be any different. I think, just given the fact that there have been four bombings, I think it's pretty terrible. And I think the media will be playing some catch up here.
Yeah. And we will be covering this a bit later in the show.
Oh, there you go.
Thanks a lot, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Saudi Arabia's crown prince will visit the White House on Tuesday. Prosecutors call for the arrest of former South Korean President Lee Myung-bak. China picks a low-profile official to head its powerful anti-graft agency, and a UNESCO study says that more investment is needed in green water management systems. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
How would you like to have your name sent into the sun? NASA and the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory are preparing the Parker Solar Probe for an amazing journey to our star. The Parker Solar Probe, scheduled for launch this summer between July 31st and August 19th, will be sent to within 6.5 million kilometers of the sun's surface. Mission officials say the probe will face heat and radiation like no spacecraft before it. The U.S. Space Agency is inviting people to have their names etched onto a microchip aboard the spacecraft at no cost. NASA will accept name submissions until April 27, 2018. To learn more about this and add your name to the spacecraft microchip, simply visit go.nasa.gov/hotticket. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, another package bomb occurs in Austin, Texas. Both the White House and South Korea's Blue House say the national security advisors of the U.S., South Korea, and Japan met over the weekend in San Francisco to discuss the complete denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. The diplomatic activity precedes a potential U.S.-North Korean meeting between leader Kim Jong-un and President Donald Trump. A North Korean official traveled to Finland for talks with former U.S. and South Korean officials and academics. That followed 3 days of talks in Stockholm between the foreign ministers of North Korea and Sweden. One report said that meeting included discussions about the release of three Americans held by Pyongyang. Appearing on U.S. television Sunday, South Korean Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-hwa downplayed the delay in Mr. Kim's approval of talks after Mr. Trump responded positively to his invitation to meet in May.
I think we were all quite surprised by the readiness of that decision. I think it was an extremely courageous decision on the part of President Trump. We believe the North Korean leader is now taking stock. We give them the benefit of the doubt and the time that he would need to come out with some public messaging.
Kong said Kim Jong-un has given his word in pledging denuclearization, and she says that's significant. She said she believes the global maximum pressure campaign was the difference this time. The Atlantic Council security expert, senior fellow Robert Manning, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the North Korean leader's actions since New Year's Day suggest a potentially significant change.
He had, I think, met what I would consider legitimate conditions. Number one, not testing nuclear weapons or missiles, and apparently telling the South Koreans that he's willing to put his nuclear weapons back on the table. And thirdly, he told the South Koreans that even though the U.S. and the South Koreans are going to have major military exercises in April, he understood and that they've never done anything like that. Usually they go bonkers every time we do a major military exercise. And many observers thought that they would try to put pressure on the South Koreans to postpone or cancel those exercises. The fact that he quietly accepted them is, I think, a very interesting and unusual. It's not out of the usual North Korean playbook, let me put it that way.
The North Korean leader, according to the South Korean foreign minister on U.S. television, is taking stock of President Trump's surprise decision to accept his invitation for talks. Perhaps that's why the delay in the North Korean response.
The whole thing is rather odd. If he made the offer, he had to anticipate that he might have to take yes for an answer. I'm a little suspicious of this whole ambiguity.
You wrote an article in the Hill publication in which you said the bottom line questions that should be asked is Kim Jong-un having a Deng Xiaoping moment, and how do you verify any nuclear agreement?
Kim's behavior, first in his New Year's speech and his desire to participate in the Olympics, makes you wonder a number of explanations. One could be that our UN economic sanctions are disrupting his economy, causing him to rethink some of his policies. So that combined with Donald Trump's exercise of the so-called madman theory, and he's got to be wondering whether Trump may actually attack him. He has not expected China to be as supportive of sanctions as they have. If he's not willing to open his economy and reform the way China and Vietnam have, the question I have is, do we really have anything to offer him that would be worth him giving up the family jewels, which is his nuclear program, and the basis of their legitimacy? On the second question, it's very simple. We know that the previous accord in 2005 fell apart in 2007 over the question of transparency. Moreover, they've been caught cheating in 2002 when we had a deal with them to freeze their program. They secretly started a uranium enrichment program. And, of course, they also clandestinely tried to build a nuclear reactor in Syria, which the Israelis destroyed. So their credibility is pretty low.
Robert Manning said any nuclear deal would have to involve a declaration of what North Korea has to offer to the International Atomic Energy Agency. He said since the last negotiations, Pyongyang's capability has grown considerably, making complete verification very difficult. Police in Austin, Texas, say an explosion Sunday night was similar to three earlier bombs that struck the city this month. Two of the blasts were fatal. The fourth and latest explosion in Austin was not fatal, but two men were injured. All the explosions were the result of package bombs. The first three bombs were detonated when victims tried to pick up the packages. Police Chief Brian Manley spoke with reporters Monday.
We are clearly dealing with what we expect to be a serial bomber at this point, based on the similarities between now what is the fourth device. And again, as we look at this individual and the pattern and what we're looking at here, we will have to determine if we see a specific ideology behind this or something that will lead us, along with our federal partners, to make that decision.
Members of the news media asked Manley how the area should cope with the threat.
This has to be a community response. This is something we're going to solve as a community. The officers that are working in the neighborhoods are paying attention not only for the suspicious packages, but also items that may look out of place. The Department of Public Safety is going to send additional troopers into the Austin area to help us patrol and be visible in the neighborhoods and to help us look for those suspicious items or just to inform the community of where we're at with the investigation. So there's additional work being done on this.
Manley said the reason for the bombings is unclear.
We've opened ourselves up for a message, and that's why we asked him to contact us and gave him phone numbers to contact us at. And again, we won't understand what the motive might be behind this or the reason behind this until we have an opportunity to talk to the suspect or suspects that are involved.
Manley called on the perpetrator to come forward.
I will reach out to the suspect or suspects and ask that you contact us, ask that you reach out to us, communicate with us so that we can put this to an end. There are innocent people getting hurt in this community, and it needs to come to a stop. The last thing we want to have is another injury or another death in our community related to this incident.
Austin Police Chief Brian Manley. Police are also investigating the bombings as possible hate crimes. The first three explosions killed two African-American men and left a 75-year-old Hispanic woman fighting for her life. The two men injured in the latest explosion are white. This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. Marketing music can sometimes be tricky. Campaigns can gather much attention for artists, and sometimes the attention comes for all the wrong reasons. Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald shares with VOA's Jim Stevenson an epic fail recently by the social media platform Snapchat involving Rihanna and her former boyfriend Chris Brown.
Snapchat took a swing and missed by a country mile, as they say. Internet marketing can be edgy, but this sort of took things a little bit too far. The platform Snapchat is in hot water after they posted a tasteless advertisement. It was for a mobile game called Would You Rather, and it asked if readers would rather slap Rihanna or punch Chris Brown. Now, you might remember, back in 2009, Chris Brown received 5 years of probation and 6 months of community service after he pleaded guilty to assaulting his then-girlfriend, Rihanna. Well, early on Thursday, Rihanna responded to the ad. She said that while she had no personal feelings about it, she thought that it insulted all people who had been victims of domestic violence. She recommended that Snapchat delete both the advertisement and the game. Well, someone at Snapchat came to their senses and they responded with a statement calling the ad disgusting. The statement went on to say it never should have appeared on their service. They apologized for having it clear their review process, which kind of makes me wonder if they have a review process.
Right.
And they're investigating how it happened, so it will not happen again. And needless to say, the game has also been blocked from running on Snapchat. I think Rihanna's tried to put this behind her, and this was a kind of an unpleasant reminder of what went down in 2009. And we can only hope that the people at Snapchat are maybe a little more fastidious about what they put out there in the future. They got dragged online, as you can imagine.
There's often a fine line between being edgy and just being wrong in this case.
Yes.
And, you know, artists, social media, everybody wants to be hip. Everybody wants to have something that's flashy out there and attracts people. And I'm sure that was the intent, but the review process certainly was lacking.
People are trying to figure out how to market to the younger generation. And sometimes they just really missed the mark, and I think this is a prime example.
Perhaps, like we've seen in other situations, they can turn this around and make a positive out of it. You never know.
Yeah, yeah, they very well could, and they should.
We would like to remind you to check out the Top 20 Countdown. Each and every week, it's on VOA 1, of course, hosted by Ray McDonald, who you will also find on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits. Read more about this story. I posted it on my Twitter feed.
Oh, we'll be looking for it. Thank you so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
I'm getting paper. Look at me now. Oh, look at me now. Yeah. I'm fresher than a moth.
And that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Defense Secretary James Mattis said he sees no change in Russia's military capability in light of Russian President Vladimir Putin's recent speech, in which he said Russia has developed new strategic weapons systems capable of attacking the United States. As Secretary of Defense, Mattis said his role is to make strategic assessments, and he determined that there was no change to the Russian military capability in Putin's remarks. The systems the Russian president talked about are still years away, the secretary said, adding that he doesn't see them changing the military balance. They do not impact any need on our side for a change in our deterrent posture, he confirmed. The recent cancellation of scheduled strategic stability talks shows a Russia that's not even acting in its own best interests, said Secretary Mattis. Turning to Syria, Mattis noted that Russia signed up with the United Nations Security Council for a ceasefire in Homs, Aleppo, and East Ghouta. Their partner, the Assad regime, proceeds to bomb, at best indiscriminately, at worst targeting hospitals, he said. I don't know which it is. Either they're incompetent or they're committing illegal acts, or both. Secretary Mattis told reporters he is aware of reports of chlorine gas use and of the bombings taking place in Syria. It's almost like a sickening replay of what we've seen before, in Aleppo, for example, and before that in Homs, he said. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley worked with the U.N. Security Council to reach a ceasefire in Syria. And Russia's partner immediately commenced violating it, Mattis said. We're working through diplomatic means, continuing to work, he stressed. We don't give up.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.